And our study tonight will eventually cover Rebecca's infamous scheming heart that deceived her husband. But first, we're going to look at Rebecca's life, because if you got a chance to really read her account, I feel like she got a little bit of a bum rap for a lot of her what's recorded about her life. So I really felt like the Lord was kind of leading me in just looking at the seasons of her heart. So as often life takes all of us through seasons of the heart, Rebecca's life is no different. Rebecca's seasons of the heart include a heart of kindness, a trusting heart, a longing heart, and a scheming heart. For the sake of time, I will be summarizing some of the events. If you're able to and would like to follow along, I will be in Genesis 24 to start with. So a heart of kindness. So this time comes when, we left off with Sarah, with and Abraham. That's what Abby shared, and that obedience, right, that she was called to. And there's going to come a time when Abraham's wife, Sarah, dies, and Abraham decides it's time to find a son for Isaac to marry. And not willing to link his family with the idolatrous Canaanites in marriage, he sends his trusted servant to the land of his relatives to find for him a son. The servant travels approximately 400 miles. Upon arriving in the land, he stops at a well and prays to the God of Abraham. And this is recorded in Genesis. My note is not wrong, is not correct here, so I just want to take a look real quick. Anybody there? Yeah. Okay. Oh, I see what I did. I said 12, 14. It's 12 through 14. Okay. So he says, now let it be. And he is very specific in this prayer. I was like, okay. So he says, now let it be that the young woman to whom I say, please let down your pitcher that I may drink. And she says, drink, and I will also give your camels a drink. Let her be the one you have appointed for your servant Isaac, and by this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master. Well, Rebecca was living her life and going about everyday tasks when the servant was praying. You know, this really struck me as I was thinking. Her kindness to a stranger through a very mundane task was an answer to his prayer. Are you a blessing and an answer to prayer in how you treat others? Do you exhibit the fruits of the Spirit, kindness and goodness? Okay, so maybe you're not going to be called upon to draw water from a well for a person and 10 camels. Did we mention that? But exhibiting kindness and goodness are two evidence of a life being lived in the Spirit and not in the flesh. How we treat others is really important to God. In Luke 6:32-36, Jesus exhorts us to not only do good to those we love, but also to our enemies. But if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive back, what credit is that to you? For even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much back. But love your enemies, do good, and lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great. And you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the unthankful. For he is kind to the unthankful and evil. Therefore, be merciful, just as your Father also is merciful. I truly did not think that Rebecca saw that opportunity and was like, ooh, you know. No, I think that was her being kind and showing kindness to someone. And she was just doing the next thing. He was there. He needed something, and she blessed him. I thought, wow. You know, ladies, this is hard, but with God, it is possible. This might be maybe a good talking point when you get back to your table time. Are these fruits of the Spirit evident in your life? What does kindness and goodness look like in your life? And in hindsight, when have you maybe missed opportunities to exhibit that kindness and goodness to a friend or foe? So later, talk about that. So we have a heart of kindness, And then we have a trusting heart. And this one's twofold because it wasn't just one, but there's another character in here that has to have a trusting heart too. So back to our narrative. The servant negotiates with her brother for the betrothal. And when success was apparent, the servant bowed down to worship God. He knew that the Lord leading him was why he was successful. And the next morning, he is ready to leave immediately. But the family wants him to delay departure for at least 10 days. The servant insists on an immediate departure, so the family suggests letting Rebecca decide, and she says, I will go. Rebecca is willing to trust her entire future based on the word of a servant. Knowing that I was going to teach on this, I spent a lot of time reading and rereading and just really mulling over what was happening and really just allowing the Lord to kind of let me think on this. And as many of you know, I have two daughters. And as I'm pondering this scene, I really could not help but imagine myself as Rebecca's mom. In Genesis 24, 50 and 51, the father and brethren say, "This is from the Lord. We can say nothing to you one way or the other. Here's Rebecca. Take her and go and let her become the wife of your master's son as the Lord has directed." This mother was about to release her daughter into the will of God and travel 400 miles to become the wife of a stranger. I can really see why she's asking for 10 days. Can't you? I can imagine the war of emotions going through her mother's heart, and yet she leaves it up to her daughter to decide and honors it. What a tearful departure that must have been. But listen to this blessing that they send her off with in 24:60. "Our sister, may you increase to thousands upon thousands. May your offspring possess the gates of their enemies." Oh, little did they know, she would eventually become the mother of both Esau and Jacob, who was then renamed Israel. Rebecca trusted and went, and her mother trusted and released her to go. A trusting heart. What a good example of Proverbs 3, 5 to 6. In action, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths. You know, if she was living in the flesh and if they didn't think this was from the Lord, I could so go down the bunny trail of the mental stories that you don't know who this person is. You have no idea where they come from. You know, we tell our kids, don't go up to strangers. Don't let them like entice you with things. And it's like, but I love that trusting heart. They knew it was from the Lord. And so they rested in it. And even though it doesn't mean they didn't try, I love when they're like, can you just give us at least 10 days? And then I love they let it up to Rebecca. And she just says, she releases herself into this. I will go. And they let her. I love that. Love, love, love that. So we've come from, all right, we had heart of kindness, a trusting heart. Now Rebecca's story takes us into a longing heart. Rebecca was brought to Isaac and he married her. Oh, what a romantic, like he sees her, she covers her face, she gets down. What a wonderful thing. But even just, I mean, when you read through that, you're like, oh, it's such a sweet love story, you know. But it wasn't always like great. And there were times in her life that her heart was longing for something. For 20 years, she was barren. And in that culture, that is not great. I mean, now we have all these medical procedures you could do and go into, and there's so many advances in technology for this. But then it wasn't. You truly had to wait until the Lord allowed you to conceive. 20 years. I have not even been married to my husband for that long. I really, when I think about that timetable, I think about, gosh, that's really a long time. So one scholar summarizes her childlessness in this way. Motherhood came to Rebecca somewhat late in life when Isaac was an aging man. For 20 years, she had been childless and conscious of God's promise that the Abrahamic covenant could not be broken. Isaac entreated God that his long barren wife might conceive. As his prayer was in the line of God's purpose, it was sure of an answer. The years of waiting on the part of Isaac and Rebekah show that God has his own time for the fulfillment of his purpose. Ladies, is there something you're waiting for in your life? Have you, like Isaac, petitioned the Lord through prayer in accordance to God's will? 1 John 5:14 says, "This is the confidence we have in approaching God, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. Whatever we ask, we know that we have what we ask of him." He wasn't rubbing the magic lamp and wishing. He was asking God to do what he already said he would do in the covenant that was made. He was praying in accordance to the will of God. You know, Rebekah does finally conceive, but the babies are jostling each other from within her. And then it says, the Bible records her questioning why this was happening. And then she does what we should all do, inquires of the Lord. And the Lord answered her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." Remember this. This response from God is going to be very significant later. Her longing heart is finally satisfied. Okay, so we've had a heart of kindness. We've had a trusting heart, a longing heart. And there are other things that happen in her life. I did not go into all of it because we would be her account is very long. Now we're going to get into the scheming heart. As women, we can be really good at planning. We plan shopping lists, meals, schedules, vacations, chores, events. But there is a very big difference between planning and scheming. The difference lies within the intention of the heart. Planning is methodically organizing something to have a successful outcome. Scheming is given to or involved in making secret and underhanded plans. That's the difference. You know, Rebekah gives birth to two sons, Esau and Jacob, in that order. Esau, born first, was described as a skillful hunter and a man of open country. Jacob was described as a quiet man staying among the tents. And if you have children and more than one, you can understand how the Lord can make them vastly different in their personalities. I think when we had our second daughter, I thought she would just be like our first daughter. And then I'm like, gosh, she has totally different interests, totally different talents and skills. Her personality is different. I'm like, oh my gosh. But father and mother sadly end up having their favorites. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. And you know what favoritism does? It breeds all kinds of unhealthy things. Jealousy, animosity, hatred. Let us be careful, very careful with our children to not provoke anger. Ephesians tells us 6:4, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. Do not exasperate them to the point of resentment with demands that are trivial or unreasonable or humiliating or abusive, nor by showing favoritism or indifference to any of them, but bring them up tenderly and loving kindness in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." It's so funny, you know, the Lord, it's nice the Lord allows me to have some real life lessons on what I'm studying. And this came up. And I think sometimes as mothers, sometimes our actions aren't perceived by our kids in the way that we intend it. And it actually came up in conversation. Oh, so-and-so is your favorite. No, they are. And the more I talked about it, the more I realized it was a wrong perception of something. And I really have, lately in our life, we've been spending a lot of time together with our children independently. because we have found that they, when they're young, you do everything together, right? You go to the play dates together, you go to parties together, you do everything together. But the older they get, they're starting to learn their independence and stuff, and girls need to talk. They talk a lot. And sometimes you have to listen and correct with tenderly and with loving kindness the perceptions that are not wrong. I'm sorry, the perceptions that are not right. And guide them in what maybe where they're missing something or they're seeing it wrong, or maybe it's me and I do need to change that. And I didn't realize I was coming across that way. But that was something, thank you, Lord, for that. It even came up last week, and just working through things and listening and adjusting how we are treating our children, making sure that we're not showing that favoritism, that we're really, really disciplining them and in the instruction of the Lord. That's the goal. The goal is to bring them up in the Lord. When I was just ready to give birth to my second daughter, I remember thinking very vividly to myself, and I was in this building, in the back row, holding Isabel, who was almost 3 years old at the time, and I was ready to pop, and I remember thinking to myself, how will I ever be able to divide my heart and love this new addition to our family when my heart was already so full of love for my first daughter? You know, miraculously, when Hannah was born, I didn't need to divide my heart, for God had instantaneously enlarged my heart. How is that possible? It really was like this phenomenon. Wow, Lord. I love them both. As they've grown, you really do have to be careful about that, that favoritism piece. And I feel like the older they get, the more sensitive I need to be about it. I treasure the time with them. I speak to them. I let them speak, and I pray a lot for wisdom from God that I can really, really meet their needs and not show partiality. All right, back to the boy story. So Isaac's getting on in years and senses his days are coming to an end. So he calls his eldest son Esau to go hunting and prepare a meal so he can impart his blessing. Rebekah hears this and decides to scheme how Jacob could be the one to receive the blessing. She employs deception in order to trick her husband into giving Jacob the blessing. Then, realizing the consequence this brought from her other son, she sends her beloved Jacob away in order to keep Esau from enacting revenge and killing him. You might ask, what motivated her heart to be so deceptive? Did she feel like she needed to, air quotes, help God out to fulfill the older will serve the younger? You know what? I really, if you read four commentaries, you might get four different answers on it. And as I'm reading all of them, I'm like, wow, they are good fiction writers, because I don't see that. I mean, it doesn't give us all of that part of her. But what it does, when I really was like meshing all those ideas together, what I really came out of it is this. It boils down to, she wanted it to play out, and she thought she needed to have it her way, that her way was the only way it was going to happen. She didn't trust God. She went about it not trusting God that he would fulfill what he told her years ago that it was going to be. This lack of faith and taking matters into her own hand results in sorrow for her. Her son flees, and when he returns, Rebecca is already dead. Wow. That deceitfulness, what did it bring about in her life? Life, joy, blessings? No. Sorrow. It doesn't tell us, and I'm not going to become a big fiction writer in this, but I imagine she probably had regret. It's just, it's sad there. Ladies, while some of the seasons of Rebecca's heart were honoring to God, this last one revealed a failure to fully trust in God and take matters into her own hands. We should regard it like we would a traffic cone in the road, marking where there is danger and a place to be avoided. It is to be a warning sign for us. Let us not follow suit and insist on our will in our way, or even God's will in our way or our timing. How do we do this? We daily sacrifice ourselves to pursue what pleases God, the will of God. I love this quote from Elizabeth Elliot. The will of God is not something you add to your life. It's a course you choose. You either line yourself up with the Son of God or you capitulate to the principle which governs the rest of the world. You know, Romans 12, 1 and 2 tell us, therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies, dedicating all of yourselves, set apart as a living sacrifice, holy and well-pleasing to God, which is your rational or logical, intelligent act of worship. And do not be conformed to this world any longer with its superficial values and customs, but be transformed and progressively changed as you mature spiritually by the renewing of your mind, focusing on godly values and ethical attitudes, so that you may prove for yourself what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect in his plan and purpose for you. How do we keep ourselves from being deceitful or conformed to the patterns of this world? I have a scripture on my mirror, and I maybe have shared this in the past, and it's still there, because I find as I read through this psalm, it is my heart. All that it says. As I read this, close your eyes for a second and just focus on what I'm saying or what the psalm is saying here. This is Psalm 119, 29 through 38. It's lengthy, but it's not, because it's just listen. Keep me from deceitful ways. Be gracious to me and teach me your law. I have chosen the way of faithfulness. I have set my heart on your laws. I hold fast to your statutes, Lord. Do not let me be put to shame. I run in the path of your commands, for you have broadened my understanding. Oh, teach me, Lord, the way of your decrees, that I may follow it to the end. Give me understanding so that I may keep your law and obey it with all my heart. Direct me in the paths of your commands, for there I find delight. Turn my heart towards your statutes, not toward selfish gain. Turn my eyes away from worthless things. Preserve my life according to your word. Fulfill your promise to your servant so that you may be feared. In Romans 8, 5 and 6, it tells us, those who live according to the flesh have their minds set on what the flesh desires. But those who live accordance with the Spirit have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. The mind governed by the flesh is death, but the mind governed by the Spirit is life and peace. I don't know about you. I want life and peace that comes from my mind being governed by the Spirit. And if we are walking in the Spirit, we will have the evidence of the fruit of the Spirit. Galatians 5, 22 and 23 tells us the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such there is no law. I love how our study's homework ended reminding us of these and the importance of having them in our lives daily, not occasionally. Tonight, I would like to close in a different way. I'm going to share just brief closing thoughts, and then pray and share a song. And at the conclusion of the song, we can just go right into table time. I'm not going to say anything afterwards. And before I share my next thoughts, I first want to give you this very clear disclaimer. I have in no way spiritually arrived, and I continually need to sacrifice my will daily and even multiple times a day. That said, if you see anything in my life that is good, it's because of the Lord's work in my heart and my mind. There's nothing good in me. I am, by my nature, selfish, self-seeking, but he is so gracious and he's long-suffering with me. As I study the word and I seek him, he tenderly works on my heart and on my mind. If you should see something offensive in me, my flaws, my failures, it's because he's not done with me yet. But my heart's cry is this: Jesus, have my heart, my will, my soul. Jesus, have my hopes, have my dreams, have my world. Jesus, have it all. I want to be totally surrendered to you and have a life of living sacrifice that brings you glory. Years ago, I became very frustrated in constantly being disappointed. I'm not disappointed anymore, at times, of course, but my heart and my mind is fixed on him, and I've asked him, make your will my will. Put in me the desires you want me to have. Put the tasks before me in my life you want me to pursue. Take out that which you do not want me to have. Do you know that surgery hurts? Sometimes it's friendships. Sometimes it's loved ones. Sometimes him putting difficult times in your life, but he's doing something in you. If you lean into him, and don't look at it as harshness, but look at it as, Lord, what do you want from me? Have it all. Put your dreams in my heart. Let me honor you and glorify you and bring you glory, Lord, that others may know you and know you more.